Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today is mind power. My guest is Frances Rae Key, and she has put together two books. They're called The Team. And Frances, well, her story is a very interesting one because it's all about her and her mom. Now, it's about the connection after her mom passed away. And I don't know if you've ever had an experience like that. I did with my father about 3 years after he passed away. And I found the story that Frances put in the book about her experiences with her mom were just quite revealing. And so many times when people deal with grief and passing away of a loved one, I think stories like these are very, well, how can I say it? They're very soothing. They're comforting. Maybe that's the word I want. Frances, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Frances, you have a beautiful photograph of you and your mom, and she passed away on October 9th, 2012. Now, give us a little bit of information about your mom, because she died. How old was she when she passed away? 93?
She was 86.
Okay. So she wasn't in her 90s. I don't know why I thought she was in her 90s, but 86. Now, with these books, why did you even write them? Were you concerned that people might think you're a little loony?
Yes.
Aha!
I'm not concerned anymore. I'm not concerned anymore. But, yes, when I had the experience of communication with her, even though my family is a very open-minded family, I hesitated to tell them what was going on because I thought they would probably think I was having some sort of an emotional response to my own sorrow at her passing. But once I took the step forward and began to talk about it, and the material began to flow through me in this form of, for lack of a better word, a kind of automatic writing, a download from her her perception from her new point of view, people couldn't help, within my own family and circle of friends and people that had known my mother, couldn't help but feel the power and the truth that of this material and recognize her voice in it, not mine.
Now, if you can, and I know this is pretty tough, but having had experiences myself, and often they have come through dreams, although I've had experiences with someone that had passed on and them coming to me, it was very audible, but it was in the mind. And with you, when your mom started communicating with you, how did you know that? I mean, what was it that you experienced that made you aware that your mom, Teddy, was talking to you?
Well, it was unlike anything that I'd ever experienced. And I must say, I have had a lifetime of what people might regard as intuitive or psychic type experiences, and my mother as well. And I halfway expected to at least have dreams of her where we shared some communication that was very vivid, but I never in my wildest dreams imagined that this would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, I was on an airplane flying to see my daughters who lived in New York, and looking out of that glorious, you know, scene that we see from the plane window, those clouds, I just felt this yearning and calling out to her. And I just said in my mind, Mother, is there any distance for you? Because I just was trying to fathom, you know, the dimension that she would have gone to and the concept of time and space and looking across the clouds. And, you know, when we hear things in our mind, we usually hear them in our own voice. But what I heard in my mind, and actually it felt like it was both audible and inside my mind at the same time. Mm-hmm. I heard her voice. She had this very beautiful voice, Australian accent. We just loved her voice. And she just responded. It just rang through as clear as day, her response to my question. And from then on, the entire plane ride, I was just scribbling down as fast as I could go what I was hearing from her. And it was so unusual and so amazing. And when I landed, I called a relative of mine in the taxi and said, I've got to talk to somebody about what's happening. So this relative was extremely receptive and aware of these kinds of things. And I thought it would be a personal experience that I just had on the plane, but it continued. Mm-hmm. It continued intensely for months and months and months. And books.
Interesting.
It's actually three books now. I know that you've read two of them, but there is mm-hmm. a third now. And they poured through me. It took longer to type up the books than it did to handwrite this material, because it was just a night and day thing for months of writing, and I had to handwrite it. It didn't work any other way.
Right, and that is very interesting, because through the years, I've known various talented people who had done automatic writing, and sometimes they're able to use a computer, but many times it is handwritten, primarily handwritten, so they're in a pickle if they don't write well. But mm-hmm. That has also, the computer has also been utilized, but here you were on a plane, you didn't have one with you, and she was very clear and very distinct. It's almost as if she is using you as a conduit because of what she is learning and growing through in this experience. And she brings out a number of different points, and I'm going through the first section of the book, of book one, The Power of Thoughts and Memory Magnets. And she said, what you generate is what you will also be shielded and guided with. And magnets, she said, when we come back to Earth, she talks about an extra dose of fairy dust for our childhood days, and we know where we've left our magnets. And so she expressed that there was a patterning. This wasn't happenstance that occurred. Mm-hmm. Right. It was like we had to do a continuum. If we didn't finish something, then we would be coming back to finish it.
Yes, or we might choose to return simply because we want to assist others who have come back.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of reasons that the soul apparently can come back. And this idea of leaving a vibratory magnet somewhere in the earth or multiple places in the earth, it's not a literal one, of course, but it's a vibration that we leave behind as a residue so that the soul can gravitate to those places to incarnate and also to travel and also to have interludes and come to crossroads with other people that we are meant to encounter in our lives.
She said, your highest mental capabilities upon the earth cannot make available to you what is available here, any more than fresh bananas are available at the North Pole. And I love that example. I really think that sometimes is not always easy for people to deal with. And she also talks about the team. What is the team?
Well, the book's, the full title is The Team, A Mother's Wisdom from the Other Side. Her focus through all these books is based on some of her earliest words that came to me on that airplane. You are not alone. You are not really even functioning as one person. Nobody is. For you are part of a team, a spiritual team, as close to you as breathing. And this is developed throughout all the books. But she gives the most wonderful analogy of a person going forth to speak at a conference. And that one person stands up to speak to a big group of people about anything, a product or a business or whatever. But what comes forth from that person is all the preparation that person has done with his or her team prior to that meeting. And all the troubleshooting they've done behind closed doors, all the memorization of material that this person has done before coming, all the brainstorming with the team, and then upon return to the team, reporting back what went well, what they learned, and so forth. Because she says our spiritual team, some of us are the boots on the ground and some of us are in the lookout tower. And we are working, we take turns, boots on the ground, lookout tower. We take turns doing both because each provides a unique perspective. And she says, too, that one of the most motivating and beautiful concepts that I receive from these books is when we do return to merge again with our team, because we find that all our growth is collective. Everything that we went through and we review in our life review is shared with our team, and our team members live our lives through us in this life review, and they're able as individuals to gain all the wisdom that we manage to acquire in that lifetime becomes part of each and every one of them. So it makes the effort to grow and to heal ourselves and to reach out in compassion and forgiveness to others and all of these things we aspire to, it makes it that much more beautiful because we know that our entire team will absorb those vibrations from us upon our return.
Now, with this experience that you've had ongoing, you're coming out with book number 3, how has this changed your life?
Well, you know, my life changed the instant my mother died, and I was with her, several other members of the family too. I felt a part of me leave with her. I didn't know what I was feeling at the time. I felt her leave her body, and I did feel as if an aspect of me went with her.
Mm-hmm.
And within a few days, I remember telling my sister that I truly didn't know. My nickname, by the way, is Frankie. And I said, you know, I don't feel like I'm Frankie anymore. And she was very disturbed by that statement. And I said, no, I don't mean it in a strange way or a weird way. Of course, I am who I am. But something has gone and something has filled me. And as this experience unfolded, I became aware that because I'm part of my mother's spiritual team and other teammates began to draw close to me, that I understood from her teachings that we have different aspects of ourselves, and we really extend into the earth the aspect that needs this particular time and place and experience, and other aspects of ourselves remain on the other side. It doesn't mean that we're broken or fragmented. It's just like you might stick your toe in the water and not put your whole body in. So I felt like some kind of aspect within me exchanged there, and everything changed. Everything in every way changed for me.
Now,
all angers and difficulties or grudges or any degree of resentment or unforgiveness that I carried over any experience or any person, place, or thing in my life evaporated. My physical habits changed. I used to have a glass of alcohol almost every night. Instantly, I wanted not one drop of alcohol.
Interesting.
My physical energy went through the roof. For about 2 years, I felt like I was 20 years old again. I was invigorated physically like I'd never been before. And my joy, my inner joy at such a time of grief would be expected in such a time of grief. My inner joy was really profound.
Now, in your second book, you go into quite a diversity of subject matter. One is a section on there is nothing to forgive. Now, this is a very big concept that she addresses in the book. Mm-hmm. But in this segment, she says, when you react with anger and hurt to those things that appear to be injustices in your pathway, you cause a dynamic to be set up between you and the supposed offender, which requires further interaction between the two of you in order for the issue to be resolved. To me, life has always been like a school. Mm-hmm. You go into kindergarten, and then, you know, you're eventually going to, hopefully, get your doctorate. And it's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight. But it is something, it's a process, it's sort of awakening from a deep sleep into, gee whiz, I'm awake now. I can make my own choices, and you peel away whatever you haven't wanted in your life anymore. And she really goes into a great deal of this in her book. And there's a section in her second book, or in the second book that she put together, called Units, Layers, and Filters. And I thought, that's an interesting title for a chapter. What does this mean to her?
You know, what was so interesting is how in book two in particular things began to change. And this was because I was told very clearly that other teammates would be teaching, not just my mother. In book one is more the voice of my mother, very warm and playful and a lot of analogies about school teaching because she was a school teacher. But the other books became a little bit more scientific. And in Units, Layers, and Filters, it tries to describe, it gives a lot of, tries to describe how when we enter the earth, it goes into how everything is present at one time throughout the universe. You know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have read books about how there is no time, that there is no sequence. Mm-hmm. Everything's happening at once. It's sort of like instead of linear or lengthwise, it's perpendicular, straight up and down. Everything's there. But when we go into a particular dimension, and the Earth is one of these dimensions, it has a filter. And you can imagine a field with all colors. And if you entered a field and you put this filter over, only, say, red is showing in that field because it's a filter like a screen with holes that would be lowered over that area, and so only those dots would show through. It's a pretty complex subject, and that screen idea is given with the colors to try to help us grasp it. But we go through these layers, and bit by bit by bit, the screen becomes translucent until we reach a point where we can see all the colors. We may focus on the red or the green or the blue because that's where we are, but the veil becomes very thin between mm-hmm. them eventually.
Mm-hmm. In fact, many people who are involved and what can be described as transmediumship or channeling, anything like that, depending on the terminology they like to utilize. And this has been throughout the ages. They always say that it's a very thin vibrational frequency. Mm-hmm. And it's something that once you've had an experience, you obviously are never going to forget it. But it is, I think, one, you're in your second book, I really enjoyed the section on the treasure chest, on your treasure chest, because everyone comes in with talents and abilities. I have yet to see a newborn baby that has absolutely nothing upon its slate of life. I just have never had that experience. Mm-hmm. There's, in my view, it is like a program that has been put into that little tiny person, mm-hmm. and it's a microchip, if you will, using an analogy for today's
right.
world, and the download has already been prepared, and then the baby has to grow up, then you have to grow into certain experiences, and it's a due process. I find it so fascinating. I really, really do. And this particular section on the treasure chest, I thought was really significant. Give us a little insight into that.
Well, in book one, what this I think is based on, in book one it goes into how we have, just like we have physical DNA, we have spiritual DNA. And this spiritual DNA is our spiritual characteristics. And in each life, different ones are activated. And just like the baby in the womb, the physical DNA has to be activated. And even after birth, certain things have to be activated physically for growth to occur. So spiritually, we are activated by our interludes with others who are predestined to wake us up. And that's not always a dreamy, sweet thing either. It can be difficult people wake us up. Mm-hmm. Difficult circumstances wake us up. So in we come with our physical, like you say, a baby DNA, and our spiritual DNA. And we begin, opportunities start to come for us, for this DNA to be activated. In the book, it says that, I'm going to read just a little bit of what you're talking about, because it says the mission in this chapter on treasure chest, your mission in life is to build upon the goodness that is already part of your nature while excavating new treasures in your present life. Rely on your strengths, but do not rest on them. The temptation to rest on your laurels is always there for a person who is regarded by others as gifted or developed. We must not coast. He may decide to coast since minimum effort is enough to carry him along quite nicely. But she goes into wherever we are poised on the brink of more development. Do what you can with the moment you now have, for within this present breath of time is the culmination of all you have become. What more precious moment could you possibly find in all of eternity than this one you are in? I assure you, there is none. So she says, clothed in your attributes, you stand at the brink of the next set of insights, and because of this, you are always a beginner. Keeping this beginner's attitude is the surest way to live your life in a joyful state. For it helps us to release one of the greatest hindrances, the ego. So, yes, we're evolving and developing and growing, but there's eternal growth before us, so we are always a beginner. And whatever are those beautiful attributes, spiritual or physical, that we brought with us, there are more to gain. And, you know, you mentioned about we're in a school. We are in a spiritual school. She calls it, too, the workout gym of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we're also teachers. We are here to learn and to teach, to learn and to teach. And we just teach by who we are. And we learn that there's always something we can learn from someone. And there's always something we're teaching by being who we are.
That's absolutely true. And I think that when you can live in the now, when you can be present with whatever the experience might be, whether it's having dinner with a group of friends, or you find yourself sitting in an airport and you're having a conversation with a perfect stranger, or just sitting at your kitchen table with a cup of tea, it doesn't make any difference. Where you are in that moment is what really matters and what really counts. Now, Frankie, you... And I know your proper name is Francis, but I'm going to call
you Frankie.
You and your mom were very, very close. And your mom had had a number of paranormal experiences, and it wasn't uncomfortable for her, which I think is marvelous. You were raised in an environment that brought you into the understanding of automatic writing at a very early age. And you were like me. You were reading very, very young. You were just an avid reader. You and your mom had this special bond. You've now put out your third book. That is coming out. And with all of this that has evolved, Do you find that people want you to talk to them more about your experiences? Because I think when we know that we can have that connection with people on the other side, but not everybody's going to have the connection like you had. But I know from personal experiences that I've been through and the stories, the thousands of stories that I've heard through the years from different people, it's quite meaningful. And it's something that you just don't forget when you have those moments.
No, it's transforming.
Yes, it is.
A true experience of this kind is, mm-hmm. is transforming.
So what would you say to someone that would like to explore this? I mean, there's moms out there that have lost children. There are young people that have lost family members. And, you know, death is going to touch all of us. That's
yes.
just a fact of life. And instead of being afraid of it, but understanding it's just a part of life. I mean, as my husband so often says, nobody's going to get out of here alive, to the best of my knowledge. And that is true, because the physical body is only going to last for so long. But with this, how do you relate that to people? What do you do to make people understand this is something not to be feared?
Yes. You know, I think one of the most painful things that we do to ourselves as human beings is to allow the illusion of permanence to be a part of our thinking. It's like trying to press, you know, a square peg in a round hole.
Mm-hmm.
We are just passing through. There's a chapter called, in Book 3, Just Passing Through. And if we can just accept the fact that this is a very brief experience that we all have. It feels long at times, but it isn't. And it's only an aspect of ourselves that is here having it. Just imagine again that the toe in the water, okay? Some people put their leg in, some people put their toe in. But anyway, a part of us is here. The greater part of our being is still in unification with the divine. And when one passes over, we continue that relationship. The aspect here feels a separation. But there is an enormous part of our being that is still unified with that parent, that child, that loved one, that husband, that wife, that friend. There's a chapter in Book 3 called Where Relationships Abide. And the fact that we even encounter one another in a physical way here only is possible because we have a soul. The souls are connected. The souls are not dependent on the bodies. And it is not that our entire soul is here stuck in our physical body and separated from our loved one. We are continuing to play with our child who passed on. We're continuing to go fishing with Dad. We're continuing to bake cookies with Grandma, aspect of ourselves. And this is why when people pass over, they don't experience the grief and missing of us because they're still unified with us. To me, this is an incredible revelation, and it's in Book 3. And the other important thing that I think all of us can benefit for is to understand that we are always aligned with some kind of vibrational energy. And they're described in all the books as vibrational spheres. There's a vibrational sphere of love, of pain, of fear, of power, of all these things. And our meditations, thoughts, and prayers can hook us up, link us up with very beautiful vibrational spheres if we intentionally do it, because we're always aligned with some kind of energy.
Francis, I'm
yes.
going to need to stop you there.
Oh,
we're just
yes.
about out of time. And before we have to say goodbye, I wanted to be sure to give the information on where people can find out more about what you're
okay.
doing and the books, because you have two third ones coming out. It's called The Team.
The third is out. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. TheTeamBooks.com. TheTeamBooks.com. You're going to be able to find out more about this. This is a woman who walks her walk, not just talking the talk, but shares the wisdom that has been passed along to her by her beloved mother. Francis Ray Key, thank you so much. Frankie, I know is your nickname, and I think it suits you very well. It's been a pleasure having you as a guest. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
This is Donna Sebo, and we're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com
or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, I wanted to share some information with you about mysterious melodies. Ah, yes. Don't you like the mysterious? I think it's so much fun when people will talk about certain experiences that they have had. Well, apparently in 1953, this was a Sunday, there is a church, St. John's Anglican Cathedral in Winnipeg, Manitoba. The pipe organ began to play all by itself. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty cool. What do you think? I think that's very interesting. Now, when this started, though, there was an epistle lesson, and the congregation and the Reverend H.J. Skinner was just absolutely, they were stunned. How could this be? How could this happen? Now, this is how they described it. They said the melodious sounds began escaping from one pipe at a time in a very clear but unfamiliar kind of music. They had never heard this before. Now, there was a reverend. It was a J.O. Anderson. He was the rector of St. John's. He was watching the keyboard. Nobody was seated at the instrument, but it played on what they call the flute stop on a big organ for 20 minutes. Wow, that must have been really exciting to see. After the service, the church elder said, "We got to have this checked out. This is totally, totally weird." All the valves in the organ were in the right position. By all rules of logic, no sound should have come from that instrument. Now, there is another period of history in the 1800s. It's 1849, in fact, in Paris. The music score from an opera called Charles V was an interesting negative bunch of coincidences that happened with that. There was a tenor, Eugene Massol, who was singing the line, "Oh God, crush him," while pointing a finger at the doomed ceiling. Okay, he's just doing it. He's just acting it out. There's a stagehand that fell to death. And then the next night, the tenor pointed at an empty theater box, but a patron came in just as he began the infamous line. The patron dropped over dead. Everyone he pointed his finger at when he was singing this line, something happened to them. And the third night, a musician expired when he turned his attention to the orchestra pit. Because of these three incidences, one right after the other, they did not allow that score to be performed until 1858. Now, this is when it was performed again. It was when Napoleon came into town. Inside the Paris Opera House, the master of ceremonies was commenting on the perfect policing for the occasion when three bombs went off. It blew out their windows, the candelabras fell from the ceiling. The Emperor's party, Napoleon, was targeted by assassins, causing the imperial carriage to collapse. At least 156 people were reported to be dead or wounded. And Eugene, who was accompanying Napoleon, said, "Ah, well, it's all in a day's work." Strange songs, mysterious melodies. Well, this particular case, I don't know that it was performed again. Fascinating trivia. History has so many different points in it. And I had a wonderful time. Yesterday, I was visiting with some friends, and they're of a diverse cultural background. And it was so much fun to be able to have a conversation with people talking about whatever their experiences were, what the legends and myths were of their particular cultures, and how so many times those legends and those myths had more substance to them than was ever imagined. And in fact, in archaeological environments, we are finding out about so much of what we have been told about history is not correct. Our timelines are wrong. So many things have changed. And that is what, when you explore, when you start asking questions, when you become more aware that the picture is perhaps a lot bigger than what you expect, it's really intriguing how life moves on. Tomorrow we're going to be talking, speaking of different cultural environments, we are going to be tiptoeing over via technology to the wonderful world of the Aboriginal. And we're going to find out from Robbie Holtz about the secrets of Aboriginal healing. This publication is so fascinating because this is a physicist. That's right. This is a man who is as logical and as, using a common term, as left brain as anybody could be. But he found that there was far more to life after he was diagnosed with MS. So I think you're going to find this an interesting interview. Also, we're going to be talking about coaching for caregivers with Yosef August. This is so important. We're finding so many generations now are having, younger generations are finding that their older generations that maybe would have passed away just about two or three generations back between the age of 55 and 65. Now we are living because of food and medical care and just we're not working ourselves to death out in fields, so we're living to be in our 90s, and more are going to end up being over 100 years of age. If you're a caregiver, and I know many people who are, it really is a taxing situation, so we'll be finding out about that. Then we're going to be talking on Thursday about America needing American energy. Mark Stansberry is going to be my guest, and this is really going to be interesting because we have enough resources here within the United States to take care of what we need to take care of and even to, you know, to support other areas in the world with energy. So this is going to be coming up. And then out of style, Betty Schubert. Betty is so much fun because she is a historian. And it's a being a historian relative to clothing, lifestyle changes. And she's put together this marvelous book that covers a particular segment of time and what prompted the changes in dress that we have evolved to today. So we've got a wonderful, very unique lineup of guests, and I just encourage you to tell your friends, and won't you join me? We've got a lot of talented people on this planet, and it's wonderful to be able to share their knowledge with you. By the way, I have a very, very simple recipe for granola, and this is by Meadow Lynn, and I really like this. If you're a muncher, are you a muncher? Do you often find that you need to have something that you can crunch and munch wherever you go, and you really want to make it as healthy as you possibly can? Well, she's got a gratitude granola that is really quite flavorful, and it is just great for kids. It's great for anybody, and if you're like me, where you might have blood sugar drops, and you go, oops, I better have something handy. you might find this a marvelous, marvelous item to have. So I'm going to be sharing that with you. And this is, well, it's got ingredients that you'll have probably in your pantry. But I will get yourself a pad of paper and a pen, and I will share that with you. I also wanted to share a story with you about the compassion of medical personnel. It is very easy to have attitudes about people in the medical industry. We've got so much of people going on right now. But most of the people that go into medicine really want to be involved, whether they're a nurse, a doctor, a technician of some kind. They really want to be a part of something that is going to bring wellness into life. And there was a 9-year-old boy, his name was Joshua Wade, and he was talking to his parents before he had to go in for some medical treatment. He was really concerned about getting an IV. They can be very painful. And his mom and dad said, you need to know that you're going to be just fine, and you have to go through an endoscopy to find out what's going on, because he was a premature baby. So he had some physical conditions that needed to be observed. And he was just very concerned. It's not unusual for anyone. I mean, heck, I know a lot of adults, as soon as they see a needle, their face goes white. Well, they just encouraged him to realize that he was going to be able to get through just fine. Well, when they took him into the hospital, he carried a stuffed animal with him, and it was a wolf. And it was absolutely his favorite buddy, and he had named the wolf Crack-A-Gold. So when he was brought in front of the doctors and the staff, he said, you got to say hi to my wolf, and told him all about Crack-A-Gold. And everybody around just loved this, really enjoyed it. And it made him more comfortable. So that was a good beginning. And he said, well, everybody here likes my wolf, likes Crack-A-Gold. And the wolf had been a gift from his grandparents, and he very rarely went anywhere without it. So she explained to the staff, the mom did, that this stuffed animal was extremely important to Joshua. And so the staff said, okay, that's fine. We don't have a problem with this. Well, Josh noticed something about Crack-A-Gold, his wolf. His front right leg. Oh, my goodness. There was a crack, really. There was a tear. And he said to his parents, oh, my goodness, my wolf needs stitches. Do you think maybe they could fix him up at the hospital while I'm being taken care of with my procedure? Well, they weren't sure about that. And he said, can we bring him back on the day, you know, when I'm going to be there? Please, can somebody do something? Well, his focus was on his wolf, his injured wolf. And there was a doctor. Her name was Christine. She was listening to some of the conversation that was going on with Joshua and his parents. And she had children of her own. And she said, my little people, I don't like them to be unhappy. And she didn't want Josh to go in for his surgical procedure anxious and concerned. So what she did, she got out a needle and got sutures and did a repair on the wolf's torn leg. Well, that just made Joshua's day. And then, afterwards, when he came out of surgery, they took Crack-A-Gold, his beloved wolf. They had bandaged his stitched leg. They had a surgical mask covering the wolf's nose and mouth. Well, the mom said that was the best thing that could ever been done, because her son was just ecstatic over the whole thing. And Christine said it really made her day to see how something so simple could make such a difference with a child. And she said it was only 5 stitches, but to a little boy, it made a huge difference. And his parents were very impressed with that thoughtfulness. She said the fact that Dr. Christine took extra time to bring a smile to our son's face was truly special. We'll never forget her kindness. Remember, medical personnel, they're just people. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Gratitude Granola, come up.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Okay, let me give you this recipe for the gratitude granola. Oh, this is so good. And if you're going to go to shows, like we have a Victorian Christmas here and so many other things, and maybe you want to take your own food with you. I'm very much of that disposition. This would be great. It'll satisfy your sweet tooth. It's going to be healthy. You're really going to enjoy it. Now, before you get started, turn your oven on to about 325 degrees. Things are warming up. Here are the ingredients you're going to need. 5 cups of old-fashioned rolled oats, just a pinch of salt, 2 teaspoons of powdered cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of freshly ground nutmeg. And that freshly ground nutmeg really makes a difference. 2 to 3 cups of raw seeds and raw chopped nuts. Now, if you pre-roast them, it's very easy for them to burn. So what she recommended is that you use walnuts, pecans, almonds, cashews, hazelnuts, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, and flax seeds are wonderful. They're not going to be a problem when making this recipe. 1/2 cup of shredded unsweetened coconut. If you don't like coconut, you can just take it out. 2/3 of a cup of honey or maple syrup. I like maple syrup myself. 1/2 cup of coconut oil, and that is my favorite to use, but you can use a vegetable or a canola oil. I'm not too fond of canola oil, but olive oil you could use. But the coconut oil adds a bit of a fragrance, and it really does make a difference. It's excellent to use. And then you're going to need 2 cups of your favorite dried fruit. Now, this has to be added after cooking because it's going to burn otherwise. So you can use raisins of all kinds, cranberries, cherries, blueberries, strawberries, apricots, peaches, crystallized ginger, mango, papaya, pineapple. Any of these fruits is really great. Now, this is how you do it. In a big bowl, you're going to take the oats, the salt, the cinnamon, your nutmeg, your nuts, and shredded coconut. And in a smaller bowl, then you're going to combine the oil and the honey. Now, all you need to do then is mix the liquid ingredients with the dry and stir it to combine. Now, if you're using coconut oil in its solid state, you may need to use your hands to mix it all together. The oats should be uniformly damp and taste delicious when you sample them. She recommends you sample. If they're too dry, add a little bit more oil or a little bit more maple syrup or honey, whatever you prefer. You adjust it to your taste. If you need more of a particular flavor, add more. She said it's really fun putting this together. And what you do is take the raw granola that you've mixed, put it between two large, or divide it between two large baking sheets, put them into the oven on the lower, middle, and upper middle rack. Now, you're going to need to stir this while it is baking. And she said, you need to rotate the pans from top to bottom. You bake it until it's crisp and golden. It's going to take anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes. Now, the oats, once you've gotten it cooked to the degree that you want it cooked, when you take them out and they're cooling, that is when you're going to stir in your dried fruit. And you have to let it cool completely before you store it in any kind of an airtight container. Now, if you're like me with your oven, when you first do something, you're going to have to pay attention. My oven is pretty consistent with its heat, but I know I went and I fixed some hors d'oeuvres yesterday, and it took me an hour to fix hors d'oeuvres that were supposed to be ready in 15 minutes, and I had two batches, so that was 30 minutes. Well, guess what? It ended up taking almost 45 minutes for each batch. Why? I haven't a clue. But it did. So I said, lesson learned. Be sure I'm not in a rush when I'm trying to do something, and have fun with what I'm doing. Enjoy the process, and then eventually you'll get the knack. But this is a granola that kids will like. You'll enjoy it, and it satisfies that craving sometimes we get for something sweet. And I just think it is marvelous, just taking it with you wherever you go. And this is something that, again, is healthy, it's colorful depending on what you put in, and if you like it with a little bit of milk, that's wonderful. It's a great way to start the day. It's a good way to have fiber in your diet and enjoy the taste of it all. This is Donna Sebo. I know we've got a couple of minutes before we are going to be saying goodbye, but I wanted to share some information about the CIA. It has to do with LSD. Apparently, during World War II, there were Nazi scientists that were testing hallucinogenic drugs, such as mescaline, on inmates at the Dachau concentration camp. What they did was appalling. And they were trying to find what they called a new aviation medicine. But really what was behind all of this is that they wanted to control people's minds. Now, they, after doing what they did for so many years and so many people suffering from all this, they found that mind control was impossible. Even when they used tremendous dosages of hallucinogens, they couldn't quite understand why. However, they did find, they found that they could get secrets from people that otherwise they would never have revealed. Now, U.S. military intelligence found out about their experiments and wondered if this could be used for espionage. Ah, yes. They got involved with it. And could such a drug be sprayed over enemy armies to disable them? Could they be used to confuse or discredit leaders in enemy countries? Well, in 1950, the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, apparently took over where the Nazis left off. And in 1953, they had a full-scale mind control program called Operation MK Ultra. And they did all kinds of studies. To the best of anybody's knowledge, it went on for 20 years and cost well over $25 million. Then it was stated by a gentleman by the name of Martin Lee and Bruce Shalen that every drug that appeared on the black market during the 60s had previously been scrutinized, tested, and in some cases refined by the CIA and Army scientists, but none of them got the attention like LSD did. And they were infatuated with it. They thought it was something else. And I'll continue the rest of this LSD story tomorrow, because we are out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't turn over your mind or yourself to anybody else. Recognize you can make the choices, and being aware of that gives you a lot of power. Enjoy your day or evening, no matter where you are on this fabulous planet of ours. We'll be chatting tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.